Hello and welcome to the Comedian's Paradise. This is, it's been a while since I've done a podcast. It's been amazing. I had to talk to a criminal last week. Now he's changed his life, but now we're getting back into it, you sexy guys listening to the podcast now. Now, this is the podcast where we speak to amazing, the sexiest, the most gorgeous comedians from across the globe. Now, today's guest is a real sexy man. He's the sexiest ginger in comedy. Apart from Ali Woods. No. No,
He's
he's probably.
definitely the sexiest.
No. This guy is sexier than Ali Woods because he's got a really good ginger beard that you can stroke. Please welcome to the stage the brilliant, the fantastic, the sexy, and the man with the perfectly formed ass, Adam Riley.
God. Thank you, Marvin. That's the best intro I've ever had. And is this a audio only podcast?
No, it's video as well. So,
Okay,
but
well, so
don't show
then
your ass. Don't show
I've got to
your
show
ass.
my ass, haven't I? Okay. Prove it, it's true.
Are we doing, eh? Oh, wait a second. I could do this on the podcast. I'll message the teacher on Facebook. 1 second. So
That's
this
a
is
good idea, yeah.
really I'm really professional, but.
No, you go. Life keeps going on, whether we're podcasting or not, let's be honest.
That's true, that's true. I may get into trouble, but it's worth doing it because I enjoy doing this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. You gotta just do what you would do. Anyway, so let's go on. What an intro. What a beginning of a
That's
podcast
good,
day. Have you ever had this intro before?
yeah. It's real. It's a real intro. That's what I like about it. I don't like things too polished, in life or art.
Or shoes.
Or shoe, exactly. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I polished a shoe. My God, it must be 1989 when I was going to school or something like that. We used to have a shoe polish tin, like a big tin, biscuit tin with all the different shoe polishes in and the brushes and yeah, it used to be a big thing. I used to have to polish my shoes to before I went to school, but I don't know. I don't know what happened.
It just
Stop doing
happened
that.
though. But look, guys, that's how Adam became a comedian. He was a shoe shiner, and now
Yeah,
he's a
definitely.
stand-up comedian who is one of my favorite. Yeah, he's got incredibly sharp jokes. I love his deadpan persona. Maybe he's changed it since I last seen it, but he is one of my favorite acts on the circuit. Please speak to
Marvin,
Adam
thank you.
Riley and tell us, Adam Riley, tell us about your story about how you became a comedian and how you got the perfectly formed ass.
Well, the ass is just God-given gift from a surgeon in Brazil. So I appreciate that. Yeah, comedy. Well, you do me a kindness and a service by calling me a comedian. I still think I'm trying to become one. Yes, I started about 10 years ago. And I think I'm very lucky to live in the internet age because you were just able to Google open mics in London. And I don't know how people started before the internet. How do they find out about open mics? Unless it happened locally or something and they saw a poster. I'm a very lucky person. I think I didn't always want to be a comedian. I actually wanted to be a writer, but I was too lazy to finish anything. And then I realized jokes are kind of very lazy in themselves. They're lazy forms of writing because they're very short and they sort of end abruptly. So I think that style lends itself to my attitude, because I think you'll discover during this podcast a lot of my sentences trail off.
Oh, I've just noticed
Yeah,
that.
there's proof of
But what's but there's different forms of writing. I mean, there's like you're mostly, but you're surreal. I'd say maybe deadpan gag merchant. That you got that's what your act is in a way. But you got people that use the stream of consciousness, don't they? And there's people that tell stories. Would you make it that sort of form of joke writing as opposed to what you do, where it's like...
Yes. No, I'm sort of more... I'm trying to do sort of more... put in some stories in there. But, yeah, they're always kind of shorter and sort of more sort of constructed as jokes. Or clear, more clearly constructed as jokes. It's interesting. I just do what I'm sort of all I can do, which I'm sort of limited in a way. I wish I could be more sort of stream of consciousness, just let things go and run around the stage and act out and show off my ass more and get out there. I wish I could. Tell stories. I'm a terrible storyteller in social situations. I forget key pieces of information. You know when you tell a story and you're like, there's a key piece of information you're meant to have told at the start, and you only tell it like right towards the end to make sense of the climax. And it's, I'm always doing that. I'd say I'm a bit less surreal than maybe I was, or maybe when I saw you back in the day. Slightly darker now. Yeah, a little bit surreal. It's a little bit. It's all meant to be not serious. However you get that across, whether it's by being surreal or silly, or saying things which are obviously impossible, it's important to make clear that this is not true.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been doing comedy for 10 years, right? So where did you start in London, or did you start somewhere else and then you came to London?
Yeah, started in London, the Lion's Den, that famous open mic.
Oh, God.
On Shaftesbury Avenue, which was a pay to play. I don't think it still is.
No, but they've changed it.
It was the only pay to play around. And people were up in arms about that, but it was still... I like the fact that you could just show rock up, show up. It was only £4. Yeah, I'd beg on the streets beforehand and just go in there. It was quite such an invigorating experience. I was so worried about it. I went and did it, and it didn't go well or anything. But I enjoyed it. I got a couple of laughs, and. But I was so relieved I didn't do it for another year. And then finally, after a year, I thought, I really enjoyed that. And also, I'm still very lazy. I'm not finishing all this writing. All these writing ideas I have. Why don't we try and do stand-up again?
Hmm.
And then, slowly over time, started doing it more and more. And mainly in London at first, but then branching out. This all coincided as well with me learning to drive. So that helped me get out of London to do comedy as well.
And possibly get better quicker, because you get to mix with pro comics that have been going on for years rather than just being the... I mean, London is the most competitive scene in the UK, but I think getting out there, chatting to someone that's been going for 10, 20 years and picking their brains for bits of information, fuck me, that's amazing. And getting across the country as well, seeing how different comedians do it, it's definitely part of your education, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, not just chatting with veteran comedians, but actually just watching them perform and how they handle different audiences, and then being on the same bill with them, you have to raise your standards, over time in order to use the wrong word, but compete effectively. It's not a competition. You're doing your thing and they're doing their thing, but to kind of just like meet the high standards of a pro gig, it's important to gig with pro comedians.
Okay. And with stand-up being the way it is, right? Like, you never stop learning from it. I remember like Wilson Milton said that he learned something from, who's that former snooker player? That's amazing. Sean Mayo. Yes, he said he learned something from him recently. But what's something that you've learned recently from watching a great comic, or even a terrible comic, about what not to do or do in comedy, about doing stand-up, but also how the business works and how to handle some of the crap as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I could, yeah, come up with an interesting answer. I mean, at the moment, I feel like even watching a comedian who's maybe not necessarily professional yet, but good at a small show, I still learn a lot, especially about like writing and how to, yeah, I see some comedians like really, they really developed an idea and they're really got, you know, it's not just that initial joke or then a couple of toppers, they're really kind of mining it and keeping going. And I think that it's just, it's so easy to write a joke and then if it works, to kind of sit back and go, oh, well, that's done now. It's never done. Even if you've got a great joke which works most of the time, it can still be developed and added to and honed over time. So I think that's often what I learn. And when you watch like proper, you know, veteran professionals, that honing process really comes across in their material. It's like really worked out. You can tell that this is taking a long time to come to fruition. But I think, yeah, learning how to be sort of long term about things, but to sort of keep trying as well. Mm-hmm. That's important.
Who's the hardest working comedian you've come across where you've seen like their work ethic be incredible? Because I've seen, this is what I've seen in some cases where I see a few comics here and there. They have a part-time job, they do comedy, but you know, I'm not going to say it, but it doesn't look like they're being like a professional athlete and really putting the time and effort in. But then I've heard stories about some comics. Like I know that Vittorio Angeloni, people have said really a lot of things about him, about the hard work he's put in. Like who's, would you say you, it's a comic you've come across who has tremendous work ethic that you've never seen before and is incredible?
Well, I think, yeah, Vittorio's a good name. And Ali Woods, we mentioned earlier, definitely. He's let's say he's the sexiest ginger. Let's just admit it. I'm trying to knock him off that pedestal with my maturity and beard, but I don't know if I'm going to do it. But incredibly, you know, hardworking and tremendous success on social media through hard work and through sort of a relentlessness, a relentless creativity, but also the gigging and just the constant gigging, constant writing. And getting around the country now, doing his own show. I think also, yeah, and Victor Petraskin is, definitely, that's somebody who's got incredible work ethic and has, you know, created a whole scene, his own in Europe, a whole sort of, comedy world. And, incredibly kind of working because he's traveled more than most, I imagine, by sort of gigging all these different countries in Europe. And just that's very inspiring. And I learned from them. That's the way to do it. I'm so lazy still that I need to push myself to get to that level. I don't think I'm thinking of starting an African tour, actually. You know, Victor's covered Europe. Yeah, I'm gonna go around towns and villages in Africa. Okay. I think get ready for that.
And so you've talked about quite effort from a lot of great comics, but how much effort does it normally take you to write a good joke? Would you say how much? And what's one that's maybe taking years for you to write?
Well, yeah, essentially, yeah, I have bits in my set which I've realized I've been working on like 6-7 years. And when I say working on, that sounds like every night I'm sort of in the garage trying to sand them down or something. It's not sporadic work, but tinkering, it has certain bits. It's just taken a while to get the toppers, really. Yeah, usually you get that first joke. That first joke can come quite quickly. just an idea, and you get the punchline. It's a simple setup punchline joke, but and then it's annoying when you get a joke like that and it works first couple of times and then doesn't. But maybe you keep going with it, and it's still, and then you get it so that it works pretty much all the time. But then you've got to add the toppers to it, and you've got to develop it, and that just seems to take so long. And there's so many jokes I have which I can't seem to find the adequate toppers, because you feel like a topper the next line, if you got your punchline and then you're trying to do the next line, which is continuing the idea but getting a laugh as well, you feel like it's got to get as big a laugh. I think that's what is important in developing a joke. The next lines should be getting the same. The next lines, if they're about the same joke and about the same idea, they should get the same level of laugh or even increasing.
And how important is specificity in the joke? Because I've seen a lot of like good jokes. It's not what is because they're so specific and detailed, that's what makes them funny.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. What do you mean? Do you mean specificity about a subject?
Yeah, and giving a particular image in your head. So like I know I mean Jimmy Carr's joke. Well, I'm not gonna, he's got a joke where he says, let me say why I look like this. My mum's Irish. No, sorry. My dad's Irish and my mum is Roger Federer. And it works well because he looks like Roger Federer. And the specificity of that, if he just said a random old ugly Swiss bloke, then it wouldn't have worked. But because it's so specific, that's why it
Yes.
works.
No, it exactly. So specific, immediately conjures an image in your head. It's unexpected as well. It's and it's slightly, impossible and surreal. And a very economical joke as well. There's not many words in my joke. It's a brilliant joke. Yes, I think planting a specific image in the audience's head is very important, and it's talking in images rather than words, if that makes sense. Like, you're absolutely right to sort of say it wouldn't have worked if he just said a an ugly or weird faced Swiss guy. It has to be, Roger Federer immediately conjures up an image, and it's a person. Trying to think, well, this to me is one of the great jokes, and it's a bit rude if that's all right
Yeah, go ahead.
to say it. But the Bill Hicks joke about he's a woman's giving him a blowjob, but she only gives it for like 2 seconds, and then comes back up. He's like, "What are you doing? Go back down there." And she goes, "I think you've had enough." And he goes, "Look, I think you know when I've had enough." And then she says, "Look, it's not that great. It's not that nice a thing. Have you ever tried it?" And Bill Hicks goes, "Yeah, I have. It almost broke my back," which is a great exactly. So that is, to me, just one of the almost perfect jokes, because it's that almost broke my back. He's sucking his own cock, but instead of saying, "I tried to suck my own cock," he says it in a different way. He shows it through a funny image rather than, telling through words. And so it's just a that's the Holy Grail, I think, to aim for in writing: showing, not telling. It's an old lesson in all forms of writing, in all kind of in writing stories and in screenplays. They always tell you, show, don't tell. So
Yes.
it's same in jokes.
You know what? That's something that they mentioned in this Masters Theatre School that I'm doing now. When you're acting on
Okay.
stage, like don't tell people things when you're acting, like acting out scene. I don't know if you're losing a job. Like if you tell someone what you're doing, like give me money like this. No, you don't do that. You like it happens spontaneously. Don't tell people. Let people's imagination run wild. And let them figure it out themselves, and then it delivers more of an effect. And it's like with Hollywood sometimes, with the films attend, they're trying to put a message through. Let us figure it out ourselves and like go in our wild imagination.
Definitely, yeah. And I think so with something like anger as well, you know, human behavior, often we do the opposite of what we're thinking or what we want. You know, we try to hide things. So you're absolutely right. You know, if somebody wants money, they don't necessarily hold out their hand and ask for money. They do it in other ways. And yeah, I think to sort of learn how to use the opposite behavior as an active, that's very interesting.
Now, we're in a bit of the part of the podcast where it may be a bit dodgy, and I think you know what question I'm going to ask you, right? Now, the joke you said, it is, yeah, it is a joke that is, I'll be honest, it's well written, but as, yeah, it wouldn't be for me as my mum's from the north, that, but the thing that I don't like about what happened to you is that someone went out to try and fuck you over. If you don't like a joke, there's no need to bully someone and try and destroy someone. And that's what happened to you. When you said that joke about, shall we say it? Shall we say the, tell us the joke and see.
Well, okay.
Tell us the situation. Well,
the great thing about this is, yeah, there are two sides to this, you know, and there are two parts as well to what happened. And I partly deserve the anger of what of the person and what happened. So let's explain. I won't go into details as well. I just want to be clear. I'm not going to say names and things like that. But and I'll try to not use certain slurs.
Yes. Okay.
Which were used on the night, it was meant as a joke, but it was a mistake on my part. Anyway, I was at a club and it's going well, and I had a joke at the time which was, you know, I'm old but woke. I believe that trans women are women, you know, because otherwise I had sex with two men in Thailand, which, yeah, a silly joke. Let me tell you, also not true. I've never been to Thailand. I want to make that absolutely clear. Okay. Anyway, so I say that joke and it works. And then some people leave. I can't really see them. I don't know if they're leaving because of a joke, really. I don't know that they are transgender either. So in the heat of the moment, I can see that they've left. And in the heat of them, and everyone else can see, in the heat of a moment, I thought it'd be funny, you know, to say, oh, I see the T words are leaving. I won't say the word, but the trans people, but another word for trans people, which is a bit of a slur. Thinking they weren't trans. And it got a laugh, by the way, because nobody else thought they were trans either. Turns out they were trans, and they were kind of they had a social media following, the sort of a trans issues educator as well, in schools. Anyway, so they took issue with that. To be honest, yeah, I don't blame them, but because from their perspective, I've called them a slur, you know, and they maybe didn't necessarily know that I couldn't see them, and it wasn't, you know, didn't know that they were trans. You know how often people like they go sit in the audience of a theater or a comedy show, and they're in the dark, but they don't know that the performer can't see them. So when a performer like looks into the audience and makes eye contact with them, they're not really making eye contact with them, but the audience member feels like, oh, he was looking directly at me when he said this. But you can't see them when the lights are bright enough. You can't see anyone. But I get that if you're not used to being on stage, you don't know that you're kind of more anonymous. So this person probably thought this is a very personal attack. So I can sort of understand why they got annoyed. And then they posted about it on social media, and that created a kind of like a bit of a storm. Not a big storm or anything like that, because I'm not important, you know. And we can talk about me being cancelled. I don't have a career to be cancelled. So I'm very lucky that I kind of avoided it. It was just like... just a lot of comments for like 48 hours, but then they sort of died out. and some great direct messages, which I didn't read, but were said things like, you know, "Hey, Mr. Baldhead," and "You look like a potato wedge," and my favorite, "I hope you choke on a cock." So it's a good range of DMs, but I didn't read them because I think that's a good policy. If anybody, yeah, this was not a big scandal or anything. I wasn't, you know, I didn't really suffer. But if anyone ever, you know, goes through something like this, you know, my advice is don't read the comments, or don't read the DM. don't engage, you know, because it's yeah, you might have to choke on a cock one day.
Fucking God. But you were cancelled from a couple of comedy clubs, but yeah, lucky you're not a big name, but then you got back into it and you're still gigging in a few places here and there.
Exactly, yes. It wasn't you, not really cancelled from anywhere, and not a big name, so yeah, nobody cared. And but also I probably had more people getting in touch supportively, so that was good. I think yes. Yeah, because it was kind of like me doing something on stage to be quote unquote nearly cancelled, it probably made it better. Yeah, when people do things off stage and get cancelled, that's probably, yeah, then there's maybe no defense. At the very least, I was trying to do comedy. Like I said, yeah, maybe the initial joke was okay, but I made a mistake with the second part, even though it did get a laugh. That doesn't matter. But yeah, it in a sense, it was the right thing to say at the time. But still, it was also the wrong thing to say. So I'm very lucky that, yeah, nobody cared and I didn't really suffer because of it.
Okay, and... But you're in a good place now, like you're back, like it's not like, yeah, you're basically back to the same place you were and you're still gigging and
going. Oh, absolutely, up, yeah, yeah. So
going
so
up in the clubs and
yeah, no issues, and I'm very I'm still yeah, that's why yeah, to be a bit more obscure is a good thing actually, in some respects, you know, because you have you have less to lose. And that's that can be helpful. Also, I feel like I personally like to be anonymous because I think that helps my comedy or my style of comedy. But it's kind of just like an unexpected person going on stage. But of course, you know, I would love riches and fame and success and
sure.
You know, all the trappings of that. I'd love to be Russell Brand.
Oh, for God! No!
joke. But no, there's a cautionary tale, in my opinion. I mean,
yeah.
About fame and everything like that. Unfortunately, he's now created his own world, which so many have now online, that he can never be cancelled in a way. And maybe that's the way things are going.
Yeah, that's true. Now, even though we've heard so many things about him in the green rooms. But yeah. Anyway, so now for anyone that's listening in that now and wants some advice, what's your advice for avoiding the bullshit in comedy and keep your head above water? And how do they find out about you?
Yeah, it depends what you mean. I did think about it. Yeah, it depends what you mean by bullshit. I think, you know, not to get too, zen about it. But there's an inner bullshit in comedy, which I think one has to kind of try to overcome. You know, because you're on your own doing it, you can get into a sort of paranoid state, I think, worrying about your career, your position in the comedy world, feeling envious of other people's successes, and worrying on the night, perhaps, oh, is that person getting more laughs and things like that, and sort of worrying also that you've got your set and it does pretty much work, but you just can't help but think, this is just terrible. I've been telling these jokes for 6-7 years, and it's not that good. What the hell am I doing? But so you've got to, this is all inner bullshit, which you have to kind of, you really have to kind of shovel, pick up in a shovel and throw out of the stable, for Christ's sake, and use it as compost for the flowers of your jokes. That image doesn't work. Anyway, the point is, you've got to overcome the bullshit inside. I think that really is, because nothing, I don't think anything's holding you back other than yourself, really. You can always, that there's so many comedy opportunities out there, and maybe, yes, there's sort of lower level things. Maybe you're not going to reach the dizzy heights you thought you were, but that's all right. Comedy is so, for me anyway, it's so enjoyable at any level, really. As long as there's people in the room and the room is sort of set up, and they're all facing one way and there's a decent sort of mic and amp and lighting and there's a good atmosphere, you can have you can have a good show. And even without some of those things, you can still do comedy and get the laughs and work on jokes. And so I feel like you've got to sometimes be, it's a balance between being satisfied with what you've got, but also you've got to push yourself as well you've got to see where you can get to. So you've got to try for bigger and better things, really just enjoy. So that, if you're talking about inner bullshit, that to me is a very important thing. If you're talking about the outer world, there's a lot of sort of woke versus free speech sort of debate. That's another form of bullshit out there, maybe. Obviously, they're touching on serious issues, both sides, but there's a sense in which both sides maybe sometimes are a bit too serious. And comedy is fundamentally not meant to be serious. You're meant to be funny. It can talk about serious things, and you can learn from comedy. But I think for me, the great comedians, they always have a punchline at the end of any serious point they make, which undermines everything they just said. And that's the joke. I think it's important to just sort of just prick the bubble of your own pomposity, and whatever you're saying. Even if you've made a great point, you've still got to bring in a joke at the end to just sort of show how utterly absurd all human life is and human thinking and human sort of aspiration and human conflict is. It's all ridiculous because we're all, stuff moving in the universe, and it really doesn't matter, and just enjoy yourself. And that went on too long. But that was the other outer bullshit.
Okay. And how do people find out about you? Do they find out on Tinder? Do they find you in the bush? Do they find you in their house? Do they find you in their room? Where do they find you?
Do they find me at any public toilets between midnight and 2 a.m.? I'll be in the third cubicle. But no, that's a very good question. I need to put myself out there a bit more. Instagram is probably, good. Adam Riley 5496. There's a picture of me smoking as a youngish man, which you can believe, the early 20s. But yes, I'll be sort of promoting myself on there more. And come to Edinburgh if you want as well. Be in Edinburgh. If everyone's interested in Edinburgh Fringe, it's a lot of fun. 3:45 p.m. at the Caves. Late night comedy in the afternoon.
Right. You know where to go, guys. Hope you've enjoyed them. And I'll see you guys at the next episode. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, bro.